All right, we're back. All you guys who are at home, you back? You all here? You are all unmuted. I'm going to mute you again. Okay. Barb, we're at the financial report.
We'll just deal with this for a little while. Okay, it looks like, would you pass this to Ramses, please? There are more, many more copies here.
Budget to actual?
Okay, now, just for people who are relatively new, yes, it's this multi-page thing, income statement, budget to actual for the month ending April 30th, 2016. So it opens like a little book, and we've got 7 months here. So on the left page, you'll see October, November, December, January, and on the right, February, March, and April, and then the year-to-date figures. And just to, some people know this very well, others, you're new at looking at these things. So look at this first block where it's the revenue, and on line 26 it says total revenue. And then after that is expenses summary. Now, each of those items under there, lines 29 through 34, have more explanation in the pages that follow. Actually, when you turn the page to page 3, the first few lines are still relevant to the totals that you're getting from that first bunch of pages where we have, accounts, where we have all the revenue and just the summary, the totals of each of these types of expenses. But if you want to look at where we are right now, line 44, net income loss or loss with depreciation, and then the next line is depreciation expense. I wonder what that is. The difference. Then well, the depreciation shows up under administration, and then taking out the depreciation is, I guess, yes, that's the line 45. So it's putting it.
It appears positively.
Yes, right. But anyway, the bottom line is 46, where we are right now.
When this was printed. When
at the end of April, I'm sorry, yes. So the actuals at the end of April would be in line 46 and column AR. And according to the budget, we are, overdrawn.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
This is just to make sure I understand this. So according to, what am I on, line 46? So according to the budget, at the end of April, we should have been minus 79,000?
Yes.
And instead we were actually minus 162,000. Is that how I'm reading that?
Yes.
So we plan to be minus 79,000? Okay.
Well,
do I want to ask a question?
Yes,
about that?
When we're budgeting,
why?
When we're budgeting, it is possible to tell which months are going to be the leanest.
Right.
And April, as I remember, is one of the leanest. Isn't that right, Brian? Yeah.
So the way we work is we raise a ton of money in the months where we have fund drives, and then we spend it down over the succeeding months. So basically, depending on where you start and stop the clock, you will show a deficit or a surplus that is not necessarily a structural deficit or surplus. So this budget was a budget that would break even. So if we were on a trajectory to break even at the end of the year, to end the year with as much money as we started, we still would have had an $80,000 loss as of the end of April. But we're worse than that. Our trajectory is worse than that. Does that make sense? That's why the variance, the difference between budget, is the best metric.
Okay. Janet?
Yeah, I think that there's a part of the explanation has to do with cash flow versus budget.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So that's the big line that people always are very interested in. We do have five more months to go in the fiscal year, and the next, well, you can go through the expense details. I don't know if anybody has questions about some of the things that are on here. Not that I can answer them immediately, but I can take questions back to the business manager. Anybody want to talk about any of this any more than me just giving you this and showing you how you can take it home and read it over dinner. Yes. The next thing that we're going to do is I'm going to hand out a copy of the budget without any actuals in it for the whole year. And this is for the purpose of showing you what kind of work we have to do to set up the budget for the coming year. Maybe before that, though, let me see.
Time.
All right. Actually, I do have copies of something that was not emailed, but I know people are very interested in how the fund drives have done.
And she'll email it to those of you who are on the Whatcha Jigger.
Yeah. So here we asked Chris Stelic, the data manager, to run us statements of where these fund drives are at this point. For instance, you've seen this kind of report before for February's fund drive. Pass this one this way. Oops. And then here's one for the one-day fund drive that we had on April 15th.
It's just one page, Barb.
They're one page. There's a little bit on the back side.
Okay.
And then here's one for the most recent fund drive that we had in May. And you'll see... well, if we had compared, say, February's statement that was issued very close to the end of the February drive, the winter. Mm-hmm. And spring. Okay, so the winter one, the percentage of fulfillment has... I don't have the figure of what it was, right after the fund drive, but if we did have that statement in front of us, you would see how what the progression is, that money still does trickle in. People pay pledges very late, some of them, and so it does constantly affect the record of that particular fund drive. The one-day drive... looking at the first line, the
Which one?
B-Day, April, one-day drive. That was the
French
day. B-Day. Very funny. Oh, dear.
It's better than fighting.
Yes, it is. Clever little off-color remarks is always appreciated. In any case, the goal was not achieved on that particular day. I think there might be people still sending money in. But I remember that what happened before that, not too long before that, was when the transmitter broke down. And there was a lot of money raised at that point. And I don't have any report like this for that particular fundraising that we did for the transmitter. And then the last one is the spring drive that we just finished in May. And the fulfillment rate is pretty low because it's only been a short time since we finished that rate. So these are for your record keeping and edification on how our data manager is tracking the money that's coming in and what kinds of payments people make. You know, for instance, in that first section, I'm looking at the May one now. Remember that acquisitions means pledges from new members or new donors. And then renewals and rejoins are people that have been paying and had a little lag, and I forget what the difference is between a renewal and a rejoin. It's the period of time, I think. And additional gifts, I see them. Additional gifts are people who donate money and then donate money again and again and again in the same drive. All right, Janet.
Yeah, the goals are not on here, or are they on these sheets? And so can you provide them?
We have a different report that will give you that.
Well, I mean, it's kind of, it would be good to have that. Do you have that now?
I'm handing out something about that with the budget.
So I have a request that in the future, can the goal be handwritten in?
I don't think we can ask the data manager to put another whole column in here.
Right, but
And there are different documents that can be referred to get that information.
Right, but I'm just saying
You'd like to rearrange how the management is doing things.
No.
Just like it would be B-Day.
Well, when you get this report that I'm going to send around, you can note it on yours.
It'll correspond to these?
The dates of the drives are on there, yeah. Okay, Margie.
That's okay.
Okay. So does anybody have any more questions about this April financial report? Yes.
I just wanted to point out something that strikes me is, pick any one of these. I'm looking at the winter one. The top left number is 632K total. And then go down to the next to last down there. Premiums requested, 571K. Only 61,000 people are what KCSM calls angel donators. Donors, angel donors. Those are people who don't want a premium. Oh, pick any of them. I'm saying, look at the winter one.
The premiums requested and no premiums.
Yeah, everybody wants a premium.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really notable to me.
Well, we have wonderful educational premiums.
Yeah, and so within that, the ones that we do ourselves, boy, those are win-win situations because it doesn't
Brian.
Cost us. I yield to Brian Edwards Tiger.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's not just that because you're looking at a dollar amount. It's also that when people pledge for premiums, they tend to pledge higher amounts. which is what one of the reasons you offer premiums. They have that effect of ratcheting up dollar amounts to get to the prize level.
Okay. Here is a budget without, as it was passed for this year, and that's, I think it's four, let's see. Anyway, it's pages stapled together, four pages. And then here's a single sheet. Well, I want you to look at that first for a little minute. Now,
6.5.
Gee, I had cataract surgery. Now I can read this shit.
Me too.
You're online.
Oh yes, sorry. It things deteriorate near the end of these meetings. They're too long. Okay. I do have one magnifying glass I can pass around. The very first column down, Maria has, that's our business manager, has put little notes on how the figures are arrived at that they plug into the budget. And listener support, the statement just to the left of that says, it's based on fund drive plus fulfillment. And this budget is a template, for those of you who haven't heard about this before, and it has many, many, many parts, tabs, they call them. And I have this one tab that we'll pass around, which is the page, it's, oh God, what do they call this? Here.
Frank, she's passing that page for
you. This one page. what do they call this page, Brian? This is where they figure out, the staff figures out what the calendar ought to be, what the daily goals ought to be, what the fund drive goals should be. They look at a lot of information. And it's gotten together by the staff who handle the data, who plan the fund drives. And this is the one that is relevant for this budget that I just gave you. And this first sheet is the document that where they end up putting fund drive times fulfillment, and they put the figures in here, and that's how they mush all this data together and decide what the goals ought to be. And it also relates to other things in the budget where there isn't any leeway on what certain expenses are going to be. So you'll see back to the budget document where it says based on history, based on history, based on history. That is something the staff putting the budget together use, where they have computerized records by account number what the expenses have been for any particular thing for like the last 4 years. And they see what kind of a trend there is, or other things enter into making deciding on the amount that's got to be put in for the year where you're trying to create a budget. Might be because they know the prices of certain things that there have gone up. For instance, a big one is we have a number of people on health care, health insurance. And they might the station might be given information that the health insurance is going up, at a certain time. So that has to be calculated in preparing the budget. Most of the items are based on some kind of history, the record of whether the trend is going up or down, what the average is, depends on what the item is, whether the business manager is recommending that the amount put into the budget be raised or lowered, kept the same. If you look at the second page of the budget, there it says at the very top, the Pacifica National Office, this is under Central Services, and that note in column B says PNO, that's Pacifica National Office, 17.5%. 17, sorry, yes. And PRA is 2.5%.
What's PRA?
Pacifica Radio Archives. And the formula that's being used now is based on listener support. In other words, in the very first item on line 8, that's listener support, and that's money that is raised that is, sought after. In other words, fund drives, not, you know, things that come in from random, from large donor that might send something in.
Yeah,
it's not car donations. You see all the different types of
it.
Yeah, it's not that. But listener support is always connected to fund drives. So the central services is connected to how much money the station raises during fund drives. And the way they're figuring it currently is taking an average of the last 4 years of listener support and then calculating on that 17% and 2.5%. And plugging it into the budget. So you can see here, just looking at the central services, how over the total year, this fiscal year, which began October 2015 and is going to end in September 2016, KPFA has in their budget, $415,992, I'm looking at column P, that we are supposed to pay to the National Office for Central Services and to the Radio Archives, $55,464. Capital expenditures here had nothing budgeted, and that was, we found out when the transmitter broke, a big mistake. So the budget that's coming for this next year, there's going to be more scrutiny about what kind of capital expenses we might need. Yes?
Can I say something about archives now?
Yes.
I just want to, since archives were something that came up in the general manager's report about not being able to pay the $16,000.
Well, it's not that we don't pay it.
No, I know. But there's a letter that is being circulated that indicates that our archives may be taken over by the Library of Congress.
No.
But it hasn't happened. Never mind.
Well, that was an interesting little
untruth
or speculation.
Untruth.
Who knows?
Misinformation.
Let's drop it. We don't need to spend time on that. Okay, now let's see. Down here, administrative expenses. Here, the whole column B for administrative expenses says based on history and expected expenses as needed to run the radio station. In other words, that means things that they know the price of stuff is going to go up. And they give the same reason in column B for the list of programming expenses. Development expenses is what it costs us money, what money it costs us to raise money. And there are a lot of things in there that, for instance, mailing and printing marketing materials. We have to pay for the use of credit cards. There's a lot of money that's spent on that. And sometimes people look at things like that and they say, oh, we're over here. We've spent more than we budgeted for paying credit card companies to handle our money. But in fact, if we raised more money than we expected on a particular fund drive, yes, we are going to have more bank charges. And then the last item on the budget is the community events. And this is somewhat of a has been somewhat of a big question item for people who look at our budget and look at our financial statements. They always wonder, why are community events and crafts fair separate like this? You know, why isn't it? Well, in fact, those activities, I'm sure they've got some legal name like this, but they are not, they're related activities to running the radio station, but they are not part of producing radio programs. So it's like we have a little side business, you know, that's relevant. We're not stepping out of our bounds. We haven't become a landlord, you know, have a building to rent out or anything. But there is no other way to include that than to have them as separate line items. So now, about this fund drive pledges. Okay, TM.
So now that we got this thing, I'm looking at the page that says
the single page?
Fund drive pledges?
Yes.
Okay, so I go down to line 19, May 2016. That's now fund drive goal, $540,000.
And that was changed.
Okay, because I was just wondering, because then
this was the thing that was set up when they set up the budget.
Yeah.
And actually, they do make adjustments on things. You know, for instance, mm-hmm. That fund drive did not start on May 10th. It started on May 9th. They decided they needed another day, so they increased the day by starting early. There may have been other changes in here. I just remember that one. And the goal, yes, by 100,000, 110,000.
So the goal was really 650.
650 when the fund drive actually started.
Because then when we go over and look at the sheet that's labeled, hand-labeled spring on the top, and it's about the May pledge drive, mm-hmm. we're really looking there at 650K was the hoped-for total. Right. You know, I mean, I want to second Janet's point that, you know, we're the amateurs here. And so when we get a swath of numbers, you know, one of the most important things we want to look at is what was the expected mm-hmm. income for a pledge drive and then what actually has been pledged, understanding that it still comes through and so on. But that kind of gross figures is kind of a good marker to get mm-hmm. an idea of how things are working. And so having it buried down here, and in fact, not even being the right figure. We have to know. So this is
well.
It's
not
like
that we're giving you a report that's got errors in it. We're giving you copy of what the staff.
I didn't say it was an error.
Okay.
I'm saying that it's
you're
difficult
saying it's
for
not
us
right.
to be able to see the most important.
But you just
thing
have to understand what the document is.
Yes, but can you please consider in the future, even if it just means handwriting in like I just did,
mm-hmm.
putting the hoped for total on a pledge next to what the actual was. See how I did it? $650K.
It's Maria that makes these up anyway.
Well, somebody wrote spring on it. Right.
That's right.
Right. So right next to it, say
and there is nothing wrong with you writing your own notes on these things.
You're not listening.
I am listening.
No, wait a minute. Hold on a minute. What's happening is unnecessary and old, you know, I think one of the things that Barbara is doing is that Maria has a thousand different things, and then everybody has a little, well, would you tweak this? Would you tweak that? Would you tweak this? Would you tweak that? And it can add up, and that's the concern. In any case, and no, yes, it is. And I'm trying to get this through. Anyway, I think both sides are clear now on what the problem is, and it will be remedied by Margie.
See, I just figured out for May of 2016. So now let's take a look at the other sheet we have, which is for February of 2016. So am I not? Don't we see that that's 570K, more or less, the fund drive gold?
Yeah.
All right. Now, was that changed too, or is that did that hold?
I don't know. So are we going to do 3 minutes here, and then let's just get through the questions? That's my.
It was really a 30-second question. All right, so it started with a 610K goal for February of 2016.
And we
brought
more money.
Yeah, yeah. So then.
Well, more pledges.
Yeah, pledges.
Our proportion of. The proportion of our fund drives that is monthly installments has been climbing. And that's partly because we've been asking for sustainers. But it's money that does not come in as fast. And when we dug into the data, we found that it's money that does not come in at as high a percentage of fulfillment. Because for everybody who puts us in monthly installments on a credit card, there's a certain proportion where the card expires or gets canceled before their 12 months are up. So we've started overhauling our collection practices for those, which were pretty anemic. It was like one reminder note and nothing after that, saying we need the rest of your money. But that has impacted our collections.
Look at the good news from February. Took a while to get there, but that's what I'm there. And then, you know, it didn't sustain itself as much for the next time around. But it's pretty darn close. You know, an estimate of 650 and you pull in 636. That's, you know, that's pretty darn good for something that's as amorphous as a listener's to a radio station calling in, you know.
Barbara, my question is about the percentage of income that we get from fund drives that we pay to the PNB. It's 17%. Is that percentage applied across all the stations?
It's yes, but it's based on different listener support totals.
Yeah.
The percent, yes.
And the PRA at 2.5? Huh?
Well, there have been some variations in that. In fact, New York pays a tremendous, when they pay the bill, a tremendous amount of money for their transmitter, which is on the top of the Empire State Building.
Yeah.
And so there have been years where they've been allowed to pay less or even have in their budget a lower percent,
right.
Or they have just informed the finance committee that they can't pay that and they'll pay this other amount.
What is it currently?
Yeah, sure.
That's what you're asking.
Yeah. So It's two things. The way we're doing it this year, it's 17.5% of our average listener support from the last 4 years. It's not this year's listener
17,
support.
17, I think. Right.
So we broke it into a fixed monthly amount instead of you have a big bill at the end of the fund drive. The problem was some of the stations didn't have good enough record keeping to figure out how big that bill should be right away and had spent the money by the time it got figured out. At WBAI, the rate is significantly lower than the rest of the network. It's 12.5%.
And they still don't pay.
And they still don't pay, yeah. But it's a...
You must use a microphone.
It's not... You know, in our discussion, we never discussed the transmitter cost. Just a previous board had set their central service rate much lower, and we thought it would be an enormous shock to suddenly bring them up to full speed. So we brought them like halfway up to what the rest of the network is paying. And also they've seen the finance committee that Barbara and I are on proposed it to the PNB. The PNB adopted our recommendation. It's also the case that they have seen such a steep drop in their listener support that an average of previous years, for us, an average of previous years giving is pretty much close to what we have this year. For them, it's like twice as much as what they have now.
I think they're not the only station who's claiming that their percent that it's too high, that their earnings over the years have gone down. Yes, Janet.
So back to the four-page one, second page.
The budget.
Yeah, the budget. Line 37, which is the PRA Central Services. So the amount budgeted is like more than 4,500 each time, each month. PRA has not been paid by KPFA. It's Central Services. Over $16,000, that looks like three or more months that they have not been paid from. Is that?
I'm not sure what the most current thing is.
All right. Well, it was only like yesterday or the day before, which was $16,000. But I just wanted to point out that KPFA may not have that money, but one of the effects of it is that PRA is hurting. Mm-hmm. Financially, because they depend on central services, mm-hmm. not only from KPFA, of course.
Yes.
That seems like a relatively small amount. Why isn't PRA contribution to central services been paid by KPFA?
Well, you'd have to understand all of KPFA's finances to answer that.
That's why I'm asking you.
It's in our financial statement. The income is less than we wanted. There's a cash flow problem.
So it's considered.
April was one of the months where we know there's always less money than we need.
Right. So it's considered a temporary problem.
Yeah.
On the level of cash flow.
I can answer because Quincy in that email he listed. The priorities, so apparently I don't have them down by heart, right? But PRA is not in that, yeah.
May I?
Yes.
It might actually be simplistic to say it's just a cash flow. I mean, if you look at our year-to-date actuals, we're 80,000 worse than budget. Right. And the budget doesn't have wiggle room baked into it. So it means we don't have money to pay all the expenses in that budget. And you'll see we're underspending in some other areas like personnel, but not enough to make up the difference. That's why the fund drive goals have been increased. And it's why management's now negotiating cuts with the union so that we don't have a structural issue going forward. But it's not simply cash flow. We wouldn't expect it to just like work itself out on its own.
So I'm proposing that I'm going to ask the secretary to put another period in the treasurer's report time next month so we can talk about the budget. It's all right. He doesn't have to make the note now. Is that we can talk about budget again, and what you all would be helpful to do is to think about what your budget priorities are. And you can see, if you look at this, you know, there's a lot of things that are based on history that are not that movable. But what is, and what you think is important, we need to make notes about this and convey it to management. It is their responsibility for the management and the staff that handle all this stuff to make the budget, construct it, and it's the responsibility of the LSB to approve it. But this also includes the LSB having input. And so I don't know how much time we wanted to spend on this today, but one of the things that I had thought could happen would be if people wanted to say one small sentence or something that they feel is very important, I would take the first set of notes on this and say these were the things that were brought up today. And hopefully we'll be able to plan some kind of meeting at some point outside of an LSB meeting. We've done this in the past, but typically there are very few people who come, and the business manager goes through a lot of time to be ready for such a meeting, but we're willing to do it again. I prefer to have, for sure, discussion in our LSB meetings where people can have input. So I don't know how much more time we want to spend on this.
I just wanted to say something, and then I have a list, which is Bill, Sharon, and Janet. Anthony? Oh, I'm sorry. So Anthony first. When you were talking about the PRA money and the... You may recall that there was difficulty, and what Sharon referred to at the beginning of this thing, that there was, you know, if you write a, if you don't write a check for payroll, you know, that's illegal, and if you write a bad check, it's illegal. And there were issues that Quincy raised about the need to borrow money. That there was a loan taken out actually recently that was then repaid pretty quickly as the fund drive happened. But so Anthony and Bill and Janet. Oh, Anthony, Sharon, Bill, and Janet. Okay.
I just had a...
Oh. Mike, yes.
I had a suggestion perhaps for the budget process. I mean, I don't know whether this is feasible or not, but it seems like if you could present a draft budget in July at the July meeting with maybe, I mean, I understand what you're saying about priorities, but I don't feel, I would like to just see something like what we have, but as a sort of a proposal going forward to at least start from there, and then we would have, okay, we could maybe talk with real numbers in front of us. Okay, what do we want to spend less on? What do we want to spend more on? I think that might be a better way to move the discussion forward.
That's not a bad idea at all, but I have a feeling that it may be for the work possibilities for the business manager that it might not be a complete document. We'd have to allow there to be holes and not freak out about that. And that'll be in process, yes. Well, that's why I wanted you to at least look at the one that we had at the beginning of this fiscal year, so you see what it, how it's laid out.
Bill.
Well, I missed part of the discussion because I was copying that document before I. So I take it that, I guess the thing that was for April, that was for what period of time, the one that says
the 10-page one?
The income statement budget to actual for the month ending April 30th.
That's for a seven-month statement for our current fiscal year.
I get it.
It started October 2015, and it's through April 2016.
Okay. Then the other question, you're talking about our input into the budget.
Is this microphone on?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're talking about our input into the budget process. Again, I didn't even know that we had that possibility. And it just seems to me maybe a short email or something like that that explains a little bit more about what you would like us to do. Because I didn't really follow that. You know, what input are we supposed to have on the budget?
It's setting priorities is the way it's described, that there should be priorities.
Hold it. So there isn't a question about, you know, paying the rent or paying the telephone bill or, you know,
no.
Et cetera. So what does it mean, priorities? Where is there discretion?
There's not very much that's discretionary. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Essentially. Anyway, I would need a little more guidance before I would feel like I would know what to have input into.
Brian, yeah.
Got his name on.
So,
Brian,
thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
To make a point of information, I found a typo in there. Got a number wrong.
A typo?
I'll get to you later. Yeah. $6,000.
What? Yeah. Which document are you looking at?
The top stapled one.
There are two of them like that. The budget.
No.
Pacifica Foundation KPFA budget.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Fiscal year 2016. If you look at the very bottom where you have program expenses, based on the history of.
What line?
Thank you. And actually, if you look at line, I'm trying to figure out which one it would be. 100. News services, AP Reuters. Of course, does Reuters exist anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And you go all the way across, and you look at the last one. Instead of saying 1,600, it says 6,600. So the total ends up being 38,600 instead of.
That's accurate.
What? Is that how it is? It just bumps up like that?
No, there's a monthly fee and a semi-annual.
Oh, a semi-annual. Okay, that was really my question.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Janet.
All of these are not the same every month.
Janet.
So speaking about process and this board and role it plays, this is the only local station board that does not have a finance committee. And I've brought this up many, many times. It would be, rather than us being presented with something and then one-on-one coming up with, this should be this should be that, it would be good if we had a finance committee of, let's say, more than Barbara and, Barbara. I don't know whether we can say that Maria is on the finance committee, but in any case, a finance committee can consist of more than just LSB members, or at least a task force of people who want to, on the board, who want to discuss or come up with priorities and then present it to the board. So that's something to think about again.
Are we going to move on, or are you going to speak?
Well, I wanted to speak to Bill's question about priorities. I think the priority setting is useful even when there's no obvious excess in the budget to play with, because it's also an opportunity to talk about contingencies. So, for instance, at the national board level on the finance committee, about a year and a half ago when we were taking stock, we identified an obstacle that was keeping one of our stations from raising money that it probably couldn't fix on its own. KPFT's transmitter was failing. It had permission from the FCC to go up to a higher wattage, which means its signal would reach more people and potentially boost its fundraising down the road. but didn't have the money to buy a new transmitter that could go up to that strength. Well, we got the board to adopt a resolution that said if there's windfall income, this should be a high priority. And in fact, when KPFA received two large bequests later that year, you know, the policy already passed by the board said if there's windfall income somewhere, it should go to KPFT as an intercompany loan to make this happen, right? Because that's easy capitalization. It's money you spend to make money back. And because that was in effect before that money got spent elsewhere, a chunk of it went to KPFT. They were able to replace their transmitter. It helped contribute to stabilizing their financial situation. So I think it's really healthy to have a conversation that says if we have money we don't expect show up at our door, say the CPB faucet gets turned back on, someone dies and leaves us a piece of their house, which is a lot of money in this market, which is certainly not uncommon, you know, what would our priorities be? How much would we want to go into reserve? How much would we want to use for equipment needs? Would we want to capitalize new initiatives? What would they be? And another is, if the money's not there that we're counting on, what are our priorities to preserve if the state goes in, station goes into contraction? I mean, it's kind of looking at the budget as an opportunity to do a little bit of strategic planning.
And if I may, just a second, that was terrific, but who knew? In other words, what I mean by that is what we probably need is some choices presented to us, like, rather than have to go through all of this to try to figure out what is even possible to have input on, if someone said, these are the priorities that we need to know what you as a board want. And so then we already have a jump start on what to consider. For example, who would know that the transmitter needed, unless somebody told us, right? So it's very hard for us to pick priorities if we don't know what's on the table. So that's what we have to know.
I've added to my notes that we would like to have examples of priorities at the next discussion.
What are we going to choose from?
Yeah.
I think we're going to move on. Now, and I think what we're doing is we're taking the remote policy. Is that right? Because we bumped that to right now. Actually, to to right now.
So people on the phone can see it in their email, right?
Can they? Yes. The people, those of you on the phone, Sharon sent an email around 10-ish, 9:30. And so you can see what's being looked at if you open that email. It's enough. Here you are. Great. How about if I read it, or is that just horrid? Okay. Could I sound a little, or I do?
No, I'd like you to try.
I can't remember a Kathleen Hepburn.
You're not Merle Street.
Okay,
The KPFA LSB favors physical attendance at LSB meetings to promote community and solidarity on the LSB. The ability to attend LSB meetings via remote access is a privilege, not a right. Nothing in this remote access policy shall create any obligation on the part of the KPFA LSB to ensure that remote access is possible. It's a misprint there. Nothing in this remote access policy shall create any right held by a member to attend an LSB meeting via remote access. This remote access policy shall only be used if a member meets the requirements set forth below. In using remote access to attend an LSB meeting, the member specifically assumes the risks in this policy, including those specifically set forth in the disclaimer. In using remote access to attend an LSB meeting, the member shall be counted as present in person and afforded all rights, including but not limited to voting, counted as part of the quorum, and the ability to make motions. Requirements. A member is unable to attend due to disability or illness. Disability or illness shall be of sufficient seriousness that the member is unable to travel to the meeting using the methods of transportation that member typically uses. Two, a member lives more than 100 miles from the location, meeting location. Three, a member is out of town for vacation or work and is more than 100 miles from the meeting location. Controlled access. Only LSB members will be provided with the information to join the meeting remotely. The moderator of the meeting shall be allowed and shall be able to remove any unauthorized user. Notice. The leadership of the LSB will make its best efforts to distribute the information needed for remote attendance, including any required software or hardware, at least 7 days prior to the date of each meeting. Any invitation link or access code needed will be distributed as soon as it becomes available. The LSB as a whole and each individual member of the LSB has no liability for any failure to distribute information needed for remote access. For any failure to send an invitation or access code or any failure to access or remain remotely connected to an LSB meeting. Document distribution. Any member wishing to distribute documents during an LSB shall make his or her best efforts to distribute the documents at least 2 hours prior to the LSB meeting. If the member is unable to do so, the member shall make their best efforts to distribute the documents via email as soon as possible. Participation. To be acknowledged for speaking, a member attending remote access shall state their name followed by Robert's Rules signal such as stack, point of information, point of order, point of personal privilege, or other approved Robert's Rules signal. Members attending via remote access and all members shall make their best efforts to not interrupt other speakers. Two, if a chat interface is available with a remote access platform be used, the member may type a Robert's Rules signal into the chat. The chair shall have access to the chat interface. Required physical meeting presence at certain meetings. Remote access will not be available at the LSB meeting in which delegates are elected to the PNB. Because physical presence is favored at LSB meetings, a member of the LSB shall be permitted to attend an LSB meeting via remote access a maximum of 4 times in each calendar year. Chairperson access. The chairperson or designee thereof shall be provided with the access to a computer being used to facilitate remote access in order to see who has volunteered for the staff via chat. Display. An effort will be made to provide a display so that all present LSB members can see the remote participants. The lack of such display shall not preclude the full participation of remote attendees. Best efforts disclaimer. If the sole responsibility of each member of the KPFA LSB to access and use the hardware and or software needed for a remote access to the KPFA LSB meetings, the KPFA LSB has no responsibility to ensure that member can access or use the needed hardware or indoor software. When using remote access, there is an inherent risk of a failure to access or remain connected. This access may be difficult or impossible to establish, and the connection may fail after access has been established. Access or connection may fail for any variety of reasons, including but not limited to internet connectivity, software incompatibility, hardware incompatibility, lack of internet access at the LSB meeting, or any other reason that access or connection may fail. If the remote access or connection fails for any reason, the member assumes the risk of such failure. In choosing not to physically attend an LSB meeting, the member, in making that choice, explicitly assumes the risk of any failure to establish access or to remain connected. The member explicitly assumes the risk that access may fail and that that member will not be counted in the quorum or in the voting. The member explicitly assumes the risk that the connection may fail during a vote and if the connection is not reestablished prior to the secretary announcing the vote on the matter, the member will not be allowed to vote on the matter. Other points for discussion, executive sessions. I'll take a stack. Okay, all right, so moved and seconded?
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. And now who wants to speak on the matter? Craig.
I have some points of information.
Craig, TM, Bill, and is anybody else asking questions?
And I'd like to get on the stack also.
You mean so you want two different things? And first you want to open
up?
No, I'm just asking you a question.
Right.
So, all right, what's your point of information?
Before we do this, a point of procedure. Normally when a motion is made and seconded, the maker of the motion is given an opportunity to
motivate.
And so I think that would be appropriate if Sharon wants to do so, that she'd be given a chance to motivate.
Good.
Hello. Yes. Okay. What do I want to say? There's a couple things I want to change. I do think that we shouldn't require that the notice shouldn't be 7 days, because I know it's been about 1 day. So I would just say that we should probably change it to under notice, where we say that the information to access should be at least 7 days prior to the date. I think we should make that 1 day, because I think that's what's been happening, and that seems to have been working. And I just, I feel like, you know, it's the modern era. It's time to do this. I think that we have members that would like to attend but are far away. I do believe that it is important for people to be here in person, so that's why I put the limit of a maximum of 4 times per year that a person could attend by remote access, so that way they have to show up for the remainder of the meetings in person. And that was why I put that in there. That number, of course, can be changed if people think it should be a different number. But I think it's a good way to go forward in the era that we're in right now.
Okay, next.
Where it said four per...
Where did I get my list?
Yeah, required physical... Yeah, required physical attendance at certain meetings. The last sentence is, the maximum is at 4 times per calendar year that you can use remote access policy.
So go ahead.
Okay, so several questions. Have you checked into possible ADA issues and possible CPB grant ramifications when it comes to this policy?
Are you asking me?
Yeah. Or you or whoever was involved in this?
I did not.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, and then second question.
Okay.
Three. Yeah. How would the requirements be, let's say, enforced? You know, people saying I'm 100 miles away or whatever. So
trust, what Leland was talking about.
Okay.
Trust. We have to trust each other.
Okay. And then thirdly, the public. Public is allowed to interact silently with us when they're here physically. And how would the public be able to interact with the people online? I mean,
that's not a point of information.
I'm
Why don't
asking.
I put you on the staff?
No, well, I'm
Well, they wouldn't be, because it says that it would be closed.
That's the answer.
Yeah, but, you know, if you want to make an argument about whether that they should be, right.
It was a point of information.
Okay.
Please don't put words into my mouth. Thank you.
TM.
You know, the first thing I want to say, I don't understand how point information is being used at this meeting, because we're opening to be able to ask questions about the motion, and so we're on a stack to ask questions, right? So
sorry, point of order.
The only part of this that I have makes me sorry. The only part of this I have a little unease about is when someone lives 100 miles from the meeting location, but they can, but then you have the requirement that they can only be excused, they'll only use this 4 times in the calendar year. So if someone lives 102 miles away, if they could use this 4 times a year, and if they didn't come in the other times, I guess it depends on how many are scheduled that year before they start coming up against not attending the minimum amount. So you can't really figure that out unless you know how many times you're meeting a year. Okay. I have answered my own question. Thank you.
Can I respond to that, actually? Because that was something I thought about quite a bit while I was doing this. And I do have to say that I find it odd that there's this sort of standard that when anybody is absent, they are just automatically excused at the start of our meetings. And I don't actually think that is appropriate. I think that there should be, if people don't show up, there is a reason, and we should at least listen to the reason, and then we should excuse them. I mean, but that is not part of the remote access policy, and therefore I did not address that in my policy. Was my opinion.
Although it's appropriate if somebody wants to propose a different number.
That's right.
Times that you can do it, or propose any changes. Yeah. For the language. Next is Craig. Oh, sorry. I've got it. It's Craig, Bill, Ramses, Brian, Janet, Margie, and then me.
I want to say thanks for the committee and Sharon for drafting this. This takes care of a number of the concerns I had. Executive session is another concern, but we'll all have to scratch our heads about that. But I was just going to note under requirements, I think it might be suitable here to put like a semicolon and or. These are all ors, right?
Right.
One or two or three. So maybe semicolon or at the end of each of those clauses. And that would take care of that.
Yes.
And that's all.
Where is it? In requirements?
So I'll just move that we add or to the end of each point of the requirements section.
Make them semicolons and
semicolon ors. Or, yeah.
Right. Okay.
Second.
Okay. Marky wants me to ask if there are any objections.
No.
Bill says no. Okay.
I move to change under notice. I move to change it from at least 7 days to at least 1 day prior to the date of each meeting.
Okay. Notice. Where is that? 1 day. Oh, we've got a debate. Okay. Ramses, you've got to use a microphone if you're going to debate. Pass the microphone to the man.
So we're on amendment motion?
Yeah, we're tweaking.
Okay.
Turn it on, Frank.
And this is about, I had to turn it on. This is about, so actually let me be clear, is 1 day notice to be able to be online, right, or do remote access? Okay, I just had concerns about, because I don't see it much in the document, the logistics for how to set up the program online, have a computer and all that. I think if it's as simple as a conference call ability, then I think 1 day is fine, but depending on the location you're at here or sometimes at my union hall or different places, has that been considered by any folks who do the technical part of this? Because sometimes it can be challenging, you know, or unexpected things happen and then you don't have access, right?
Well,
so 1 day to me seems a little too short. Maybe I would at least like to see it as 24 hours so that it's not like the day before at 5 p.m., somebody's like, oh, can I get online, right? And then we're caught off guard.
Well,
and there's nobody working at the end of the day or so.
Well, what we're doing now, just as somebody who's been doing the technical end of this, the great technician that I am, we're now looking for making sure that we have Wi-Fi access where we're meeting so that we can do what we have. And actually, even though we have Wi-Fi access here, I had trouble because it was slow. And Frank was kind enough to set up a personal hotspot so that we're going through the personal hotspot instead of that. But the... Well, a lot of people know how to do personal hotspots, not included. But a few of us might also learn. And we did a personal hotspot for the retreat, is how we did it. But what's happening is people are, it's very easy. It's a thing that Scott Olson originally used, and that, so I picked it up. Anyway, so it's easy. It's easy peasy. And
can I just say that I am okay with changing it to 24 hours rather than one day?
Yeah, okay.
So I will make my motion to have it read 24 hours. Okay.
Right, okay, where is that?
Under notice,
okay. Any objections? No, okay, so moved, so done, or whatever I would say properly. Were you finished?
Well, I just wanted to add.
You've got to speak in here.
Yes, okay. So I just want to say I Ramses, I think, raises one of the points that was really troubling me earlier, a couple months ago when this was raised about people having access, having technical connections and so forth, and people making plans based on the meetings. And I think you handled this well by saying it's essentially kind of a gamble. I mean, probably we'll have this, but if something goes wrong, people won't be able to participate. And I think we just have to be clear it's a little bit of a risk. And there are times when our board has met in places to try to get out into the community and meet in places like, churches and libraries and so forth that may not have internet connections or may not have some sort of technical connection. And I think that's a trade-off we have to be clear that we'll make. It may not always work. So anyway, that's all. And I just wanted to point out that you did address that here. So thank you.
God. Let's see. Bill. You've got to use a mic. Pass him the mic. Brian, pass it downtown. Thank you.
Well, I just wanted to say I'm a little upset because I was going to bring up the thing about the or before Craig. And I'm the lawyer, so. I found it upsetting. I was an English major, so I want to deal with syntax. So the second paragraph, third line, it should be risks of this policy, not in this policy.
Where is this? Where are we?
Second paragraph, third line.
Yeah.
Risks of this policy is the proper.
So moved.
Okay.
So moved. Any objections? See none. It's ordered.
I don't want to take up a lot of time, but I want to point out to you that under document distribution on the second page, first line, that is an example of one of the great dilemmas in English where you use the there.
That is why you see it. I just want to interrupt and say I actually looked it up online, and we are being bold and slightly reckless in
That's
using
right.
the word there.
Right. Because you've moved to the plural.
Exactly.
Right, yeah. So one of the great problems in English. Okay, so now, actually, I have something substantive to talk about. Oh, no, actually, I have something else, and this is not my idea, and I'm not going to attribute it to anybody else. But under requirements, number one, someone said, well, what if they had a, this might have been Margie, what if they had a family member who's got a problem? Okay,
it was me who said
she's gonna that. She's going to take care of that. Okay, and then the last thing I have, actually, is this whole thing where it says chairperson access and, shall be provided with access to a computer being used to facilitate remote access in order to see who has volunteered for the stack. I mean, is it that precise or is it broader than that? I mean, that seems an odd way to put it, that's all, to me.
I'm okay with taking that out.
Where is that?
It's middle of the second page, chairperson access. Well, I mean, I... I just thought it should be written more broadly. It seems so narrow when you're just talking about they're just going to have access for the stack. I mean, it seems odd the way it's written to me. Because the chairperson may want to access the system for a whole lot of reasons other than just who's on the stack.
I agree.
Yeah. I don't like the way it's written.
I don't have a vote.
So just delete.
The chairperson shall be provided with access to a computer being used to facilitate remote access.
I could just have the period.
Period.
Yeah.
Period.
So moved.
So moved. Any objections?
No.
So ordered. Did you have another?
No, I'm done.
Okay, Ramses is next. You've got to pass the mic. We keep passing Brian, who's lower in the. Go ahead, Ramses. Is it on?
Point of order.
It's on now.
Ramses, this is his second round, and some of us haven't spoken yet.
Oh, you spoke. Okay, you're right.
It was,
I apologize.
My first comment was actually in the motion amendment.
Right? Just speak.
Okay. So, and I'll time myself. A few things. I think it's been brought up, right? The issue of executive session. Also, I'm wondering about the CPB and requirements around that. Does this remote access, including participation and voting, affect that, yes or no? I'm not clear on that. And then on the requirements for asking, you know, to be on remote access, number three puts 100 miles from the meeting location if you're on vacation or work. I know that I have been at work less than 100 miles. I don't think we'd ever really be that, you know, difficult about it with anyone, but I would actually propose that we don't put the 100 miles if someone's already set for vacation or work and lets us know ahead of time that's why they're not attending, because I don't think the 100 miles is going to make much difference. If it's 50 or 100, you're gone, you're out. Right. Sorry, so I can repeat the three things. CPB requirements, the 100 miles being a concern that I know it would affect me, and then executive session.
Okay, let's
are we
use
allowing
three first. Are people willing to strike and is more than 100 miles from the meeting location? That is out of town for, is on vacation or at work? Is that all right? And period.
Well, it's four, though. So you want to put
number three.
Three.
Oh. A member is on vacation or at work.
What if someone's on vacation at home?
Well,
that's
okay. Wait a minute.
Yeah, I'm just worried about
okay.
The end is 100 miles away.
A member is on vacation or at work. Is there an objection to that? Brian, are you having an objection?
I would like an intervention, if that's possible.
Give him the microphone. You're next up to speak, but I'm trying to deal with all of this. Yeah.
Okay. I think it's weird to say out of town for vacation or work.
I struck out of town. Is on vacation or
can I finish?
Work? Oh, I'm sorry.
I think two and three, we just want to condense to a member is more than 100 miles away from the meeting. Who cares why?
No. It's two different things.
What if you're out of town for a funeral? It's not work. It's not a vacation.
What if you're at work and you're around the corner but would like to be at the meeting and you could call in but you can't come over?
Right. Well, I think what the policy is trying to anticipate is someone's out of town on a work trip but they have the free time to participate in the meeting.
I know that's what the policy as written was attempting to participate. I'm raising whether or not it's people are... Well, is that your stack position? I mean, you're up next. I thought you were having a conversation with Ramses.
I would like to speak.
Who is that?
Mark.
Go ahead. Mark.
Part of the problem with this is that this policy is trying to set up all of the rules and be inflexible. There needs to be a discretion of the body or chair provision put in there so that any situation that comes up can be addressed and without ironclading binding us into a situation that's untenable.
Okay. What? Okay. I think we're still at Ramses's issues, and I would like to have a discussion about his issues and then and clear them and then go to Brian, who's next on the stack.
And then who's next?
And after that is Janet, and then Margie, and then me, and then Anthony. And Mark has raised it. I mean, he may come back again. Anyway, so Ramses raised three different points, and one of them was whether or not we are willing to have people who are not 100 miles away. And he raised at work, but this is in a sentence which also includes on vacation. Do we want to give them the right to have remote access? Yes or no? Could I have a straw vote on it? On vacation, are people, if people are at home and want to call in but don't want to come over, do people want to have remote access available to them?
No.
No. Okay. If people are at work and are close but could have remote access, do people want to give them access?
No.
Okay. How many yes? And how many no? Well, it's tied.
Okay, but can I?
Yeah.
I actually think, just to respond to the point that we're discussing about, I think that Mark's suggestion is actually the solution. We eliminate number three entirely, and we replace it with, or at the discretion of the LSB. And that way, if you're at work and you let us know, we can decide, and then maybe if we think, well, you're just working around the corner, you can come over here, we would say no. But if we're thinking, you have to drive and you can't come, we could say yes. And that would apply for all situations, a funeral, all these scenarios that are being raised.
Second.
Okay. Is there a consensus on that?
The LSB or the chair? I mean,
The LSB.
Well,
the
LSB.
It would have to be voted on at the meeting.
Yeah, which kind of begs the question.
No,
it doesn't.
Is available to be on remote access.
And then we'll say you can't be there.
Okay. Got it.
We're cutting you off.
Goodbye.
Okay.
And I actually also wanted to address the CPB question, if I could, since you raised that.
Go ahead.
I did check some rules, and I have never, ever found anything within the CPB that says that this would not be allowed, but I didn't, specifically research that question. But I do happen to know that under California law, it is permissible to do this, so I can't imagine that the CPB would be in conflict with that.
All right, and what was the third thing you raised?
So if that's the case, then could they vote in the executive session?
Oh, then the question of executive session.
Why don't we hold that separately? Can I address the CPB matter as well?
You can when it comes to your turn. Brian's turn.
No, Sharon responded to that. I'm responding to Ramses. Just
go ahead. I don't care.
Well, I mean, the whole issue of CPB open meeting requirements and what the rules are for noticing meetings and having meetings are governed by the CPB. And Pacifica is, there's a CPB compliance officer that Pacifica has. And that the PNB has telephone meetings, that's really an exception to the CPB open meeting requirements. And as far as what we know, what the PNB discussed and other people, the CPB might be an issue when it comes to local station board.
That's meetings. Very different because this people will be here. Brian, please. I spend months chairing, so give me a little slack, okay? Go ahead.
I think if someone finds any prohibition in CPB regs, they should bring it back to us and we should reconsider. I've looked at the meeting requirements in detail before and never come across anything that would seem to run contrary to this, but I think it's a moot. I mean, we're spinning our wheels. I have a bunch of small amendments, some of which I hope would be uncontroversial.
Good.
Is it okay if I run through them?
Please.
To Margie's point, sorry to steal your thunder, but on the first line of requirement section one, change the sentence, a member is unable to attend due to disability or illness, to disability, illness, or caregiver responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. Everybody agree?
Yes.
Any objection? It's done. Okay. Next.
Page two, under the heading required physical presence at certain meetings. The first sentence reads, remote access will not be available at the LSB meeting at which delegates are elected to the PNB. I would like to add the words, or at the meeting at which officers are elected.
Any objection? There's an objection. So do we want to debate that and discuss it, or do we want to just vote?
Well,
maybe, why don't, do you mind if he...
Well, let me motivate it for 30 seconds.
Okay.
We don't yet have a mechanism for including remote participants in paper-based secret balloting. And I think we should make it clear that the December meeting is the meeting we're supposed to elect officers. It's the meeting at which new board members are supposed to be seated. I think if we're going to carve out exemptions to when people can participate remotely, it's that one and when we elect PNB reps, which is supposed to be the January meeting.
Does that the
well it
it's on.
It troubles me that we're spending a lot of time developing this access and then we're gonna not have it for some of the most important things this board does. And by the way, although I'd like that to be stricken, where that sentence should read at which directors are elected to the PNB. I have another point, but I guess that should wait until we. Well, it's it that doesn't relate to Brian's proposed
amendments. Okay, well, then you're on the stack, so let Brian.
Oh, okay. Huh? Oh, so do you want me to continue with my other?
No.
Or
no.
Yeah.
I'll come back to you.
Okay.
I just wanted to get that objection off. All right. So we've heard Anthony's objection. Do we want to just take a little vote here? Okay. All those in...
But can we have the language, Brian, that we're voting on?
To append to the end of the first sentence under required physical presence at certain meetings, comma, or at the meeting at which officers are elected. LSB officers.
Okay, and seconded. So all in favor of that, please raise your hand. All opposed? Okay. All right, it passes, and you guys don't get to vote online, of course. Okay.
Cut me off whenever you feel like I'm hogging the mic, but I have another one.
Go ahead.
Point of information, what about the term delegates? Change that to directors?
Second.
Oh, right.
So it is delegates?
Okay.
Okay.
I want to propose adding a section immediately after that one entitled secret/paper ballots.
Okay.
Whose body would read as follows. The LSB does not currently have a mechanism for including remote participants in real-time voting conducted by secret ballot and shall exclude them from such votes until it does.
Okay. Does anybody disagree with that? Seeing none, so ordered. So that was the next section. Go ahead with your next one.
At the end, I'd like to propose adding a section entitled Executive Sessions.
Yes. Good.
Whose body would read as follows. In executive sessions, all remote participants shall be required to certify orally that they are neither recording the session nor permitting any other person to monitor it.
Is that agreeable?
Yeah.
Can you repeat that again? In executive sessions, all remote participants shall be required to certify orally that they are neither recording the session nor permitting any other person to monitor it.
Is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, that's added.
And the final one we may want to debate, because this is new, I would like it to have a sunset clause. So I would propose as a final sentence, this policy shall cease to be effective on December 1st, 2016, unless and until it is renewed by the KPFA-LSB.
Is there, okay, do you want to motivate that? Ramses asks why.
Well, we'll have a new board coming in December. I don't think they should necessarily be locked into our rules. And at that point, having tried to run several meetings according to these rules, we may know what the bugs are. So I don't think we should be locked in. I think if it's going well, it's really simple to say keep it going.
I second it. I agree.
Okay. Any disagreement on that? Okay. Now, I have more people. There's Janet. I have Janet, Margie, me, Anthony, Sharon.
Take me off. No, I was trying to get
the call. Oh, okay. Take Janet.
Okay, I'm of mixed minds about this policy. Maybe some of you remember back in October 2015, the PNB voted on a similar proposal. It was a proposed bylaws amendment that I had drafted, and it failed overwhelmingly. And by the way, both Brian and Jose Luis voted against it, and Margie abstained. I don't know why there's a change of mind. In any case, that said, given that this policy is based on an interpretation of California law, and the KPFA-LSB is a standing committee of the PNB, and under its direction and supervision, I move an amendment as follows, and this would go at the beginning. The KPFA-LSB recommends the PNB consider approving the following KPFA-LSB remote access policy for KPFA-LSB meetings. This is at the beginning. The KPFA-LSB recommends the PNB consider approving the following KPFA-LSB remote access policy for KPFA-LSB meetings, and then after that would be this policy.
I know if I say something that it'll be corrected by somebody here, but... fails for a lack of a second.
Is there a second?
No.
No.
Huh?
Ask.
Okay. There will be. Is there a second? Fails for a lack of a second. Okay. I'm next, Ramses, so you're cheering. What? Yeah. What?
Margie and I were named by the last speaker. I would like to use a point of privilege.
Go ahead.
Yeah. What came up before the Pacifica National Board was a bylaws revision, which means it's written in stone once you sign off on it. No sunset clause, can't be tweaked. And as opposed to this motion, which says remote participants do that at their own risk, they may not get connected or they may be dumped partway through, the language of that proposed bylaws amendment created an affirmative obligation on the part of the local station board to set up remote access on short notice. It's materially very different. And I really appreciate the thought that went into crafting this because I think it's something that doesn't set us up to be at each other's throats and that does commit us to following through on our best efforts to include people who can't be here in person.
Me too.
Okay. All right. So... I'm trying to find the. I'm next, so I'm talking. I'm trying to find the spot where it says only four times a year. Where is that?
That is in
required physical
presence at certain meetings.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's the last sentence. I don't know what I think of that. Isn't that interesting? I'm leaning towards saying more, but since it's only a few, you know, we're experimenting with it. I guess I'll just leave it alone. So I'm passing, and the next person is Anthony.
Yeah, I'd like to modify the required physical presence. Reason being, when we look back at the requirements on page one, we're sort of mixing things which aren't quite alike. Residence doesn't often change. Disability, I guess, never changes, probably. Illness does change. Travel does change. So so limiting this to a maximum of four times a year would make sense if someone requests it because of travel. Not so if they request it because of disability or living a great distance away. So I propose what was the final sentence? To attend an LSB meeting via remote access a maximum of four times in each calendar year. I'd amend that to read, in cases of travel or illness, then the others, it would not be limited. If you live 800 miles away, you can request remote access for each meeting.
All right, so how many, let's do a straw poll, and understanding that we've got a sunset clause, so how many people want to have expanded remote access for people sort of who are far away, who live far away, or who are disabled? Is that what you meant?
Yeah, that's my intention. You framed it correctly. I guess the language would just say, because physical presence is favored at LSB meetings, a member of the LSB shall be permitted to attend an LSB meeting via remote access a maximum of four times in each calendar year in cases of travel or illness. And then if you want, you could add a semicolon and then say no such limit shall apply to disability or residence.
Or you could just say no such no such limitation would apply to people with disability or great distance. But do people like that or don't like that? How about just a sense of yourself? How many would like that? Well, how?
Well, even acknowledging that you can hear our radio station in any part of the world, you know, somebody who lives at a great distance is really not a part of this community. Whereas somebody who's disabled and lives across the street, you know, really is to a much greater sense. And so I don't really know how I feel about that. I don't think I'm ready to say board members can live, you know, in China. And I mean, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That the board of KPFA does not need to be at all within the realm of our listening, our immediate listening audience, take away digital devices and, you know, and so forth. That, to me, really changes the nature of governance, perhaps. I don't know how I feel about it. But I see the disability and I see living at a great distance to be two really very different things.
Craig, Brian, Janet, Margie. Sharon. Sharon. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, sorry.
You know, I guess I'm inclined not to support this because You know, one of my concerns, and as this policy was being developed, was that there'd be some sort of limitation that would prevent people, or that would prevent the case where people never have to come to meetings. And I think if we remove the limitation, even in cases of disability or residence, you know, it means they'll never have to come to a meeting. And as we've all noted many times previously, there's a real value to having face-to-face interactions. I have a real strong concern about that. And I guess I would be inclined not to support a change like this for that reason.
Ryan.
Well, I just want to point out that this, as currently amended, sunsets on December 4th, and we only have 4 meetings calendared between now and then. So we might not want to spend too much time over this amendment. It can get revisited when the policy comes up for renewal.
Is that all right if we just...
Can I just say something real quick?
Of course. But after Sharon and Margie.
I was on the stack before.
Go ahead. Okay. I didn't...
All I wanted to say was that there are no requirements in the bylaws for a member of a station, no geographical requirements. So, I mean...
My only comment was I started thinking maybe we should remove the word disability, but I'm confused, but I think we should just go forward. We've got 4 meetings left. We can revisit this and maybe craft the language a little better next time around. Exactly.
Okay. All right. So, I'm not going to read the whole thing as amended. You're going to have to just, you know.
We have to vote on it. We have to disclose Anthony's amendment.
Have to disclose what?
Dispose.
Oh. Anthony's amendment. I thought we did. It wasn't seconded. Oh, no, was it?
You didn't ask for
it. I didn't ask for it. Is there a second? Fails for lack of a second. Thank you for catching it. All right, so now we've got the motion as we all understand it, but I'm not going to read it. So all in favor, please signify by saying aye, or aye. Raise your hand or something. Opposed?
What are we voting on now?
The whole thing. Yeah. All right, so all in favor, please raise your hand. All opposed. There's one... opposition, and are there any abstentions? No abstentions. And do you guys all want to say great?
Do you want to vote or something?
You want to vote or something? I guess you can't, but now you could. Anyway, never mind. It's 20. We're sitting in a meeting room, and it's 20-4, so I'm going to skip your
vote. But as soon as it passes, you can make a motion to rescind it.
Right. Okay. So, all right, where am I?
PNB report.
PNB. Okay, who's giving it? Janet.
Okay, so between the last meeting and this, there were 3 PNB meetings. April 21st, there was a continuation meeting of the April 7th meeting. So outstanding budgets with provisos for all units except WPFW were approved. Note that WPFW had been addressed at the April 7th meeting. And then I... Okay, so technically you're right. Yeah. And then there was a motion requesting the IED and the CFO present a proposal to engage a national development consultant. Moving to May 5th, there was a motion, these are motions that were approved, a motion amending the national office budget to add $15,000 to the national budget for the 2016 elections. And there was a motion to implement the, quote, initiatives for improving cash flow in the short term. That was, anyway. Then June 2nd, 3 of 4 proposed bylaws amendments for the first 2016 bylaws amendment ballot were approved. Delegates at all five stations have until July 31st to vote on them. And then if you go to pacifica.org, you can see the three that were approved by the PNB. The PNB authorized the tasks of the 2016 Personnel Committee. The PNB approved financial support for temporary clerical assistance for the PNB secretary. Note that a job posting will be on the Pacifica.org sometime next week. And $10,000 was approved for programming of the 2016 political party conventions. And then finally, you might already know this, or I'll just announce it, that the 2016 National Elections Supervisor, Lynn Serpe, was hired in mid-May. She has hired local elections supervisors at each station, and they are going forward with the 2016 elections of 12 delegates from each station. Nominations are open until June 30th, and there's go to elections.pacifica.org for more information. I'm done.
Brian.
Just want to add a few things from our last couple meetings. During the CFO's report, the CFO reported out publicly that for the May 15th payroll, three units, WBAI, WPFW, and the Pacifica Radio Archive, were unable to fund their payroll on time. At the Pacifica Radio Archive, they had to pull them out of the payroll system because if you don't have enough money to cover the full payroll, nobody gets a check. At the Pacifica Radio Archive, they were able to scrape together enough money to cut hand checks by the deadline. At WPFW, the CFO reported that the station had to raid a restricted fund that was earmarked for and restricted to moving expenses when they move into a permanent location. That was a donor-imposed restriction, as I understand it. But they were, using that money, able to fund their payroll on time. WBAI, they got hand checks late past the payroll date, but got them eventually. In the resulting discussion, I proposed a motion to give the CFO authority to issue furloughs, 15-day furloughs, at any unit where it looks like the unit wouldn't be able to pay its payroll. The rationale being, it's better to tell someone not to come to work on Monday than to tell them to keep coming to work and not have a paycheck for them at the end of the 2 weeks.
It's the difference between legal and illegal.
Yeah, that too. That motion came towards the end of the meeting and was tabled, may come up in the future. At, I believe, the previous meeting, Janet had proposed a motion that as soon as KPFA has more than $90,000 in its bank account, the national office should take it out, and that motion failed.
Take it out to pay the auditor.
Done?
Well, unless Margie or Jose Luis.
Well, no, I was going to ask Margie or Jose Luis.
I missed two of those meetings because
one,
because I was ill and I
didn't have vacation. Okay. And Jose Luis, if you want to speak, you have to unmute your phone. I muted you. Or I can unmute you if, let's see, unmute. Do you want to say anything, Jose Luis?
Okay. Well, yes. Thank you for unmuting me. Sending emails. I would like to say a couple of things about the PMB and some of the questions raised by Director Campisi and the governance structure. And one is that, you know, the PMB remains highly factionalized to the point that it cannot make decisions that the chief financial officer is urging the national board to make in order to keep the network sustainable. The directors are each looking for the best interests of their own stations and end up doing different political maneuvers in order not to vote to have the CFO's request to be allowed to make changes that are needed financially. So what this tells me is that we need to follow through with redoing our governance structure at the local level and national level, and only through membership education and approval so we can fix the governance issues. Because when our hired folks, who like our CFO, is giving us recommendations of what he needs in order to accomplish his job, and the national board is factionalized, looking at who their partners are and not really looking at the structure and the problems, and vote out of political will, we have a problem, and this is what we're encountering now. We have to deal. WBAI and WPFW are in trouble, and unless money gets moved into those stations, they're going to continue dragging the whole network down. But there's no leadership at the PMB level to make things happen, and they won't cede power to the CFO to make things happen. So as for our own survival, we need to start looking at having membership education and getting the membership involved so they can help us amend these governance structure of Pacifica.
All right, we're making a list. I saw Janet, Margie, and then Anthony, Sasha.
For our web stream listeners, the chair, Carol Trappas, has left the room with some urgency.
All right, Janet.
I just wanted to say that the previous speaker, that was that person's opinion. I have a different opinion about where the PNB, you know, the makeup of the PMB and how it's operating and the role of the CFO, and I'll stop there.
Margie.
I just wanted to say that we only have 10 minutes left in this meeting, and the next item on the agenda is a report on the audit committee, and I would prefer to hear the discussion going forward for the people who have raised their hands. And I will send you all a report from the from the audit committee, so that everybody, don't worry about that, okay?
Okay. Sasha and then Bill. No, I'm sorry, Anthony, Sasha, and Bill.
So I understand that budgets were approved for several units, or maybe all the units were approved in April, so I presume those are fiscal year 2016 budgets. So they've been approved with, you know, in midstream, so to speak, when the fiscal year was already half over. How did that happen?
Who's answering that question? Can you respond, Brian?
I'm getting ready to say something intense. We were without a CFO during the budget approval process at the National Finance Committee level. I don't think we completed budget review and approval until a month into the fiscal year. Okay. That was November. There were two, for the budgets we did approve, there were two stations, WBAI and WPFW, that were never able to present an acceptable budget, meaning a budget that both made realistic assumptions about what they could raise based on their past performance and showed them not running a deficit. We kept trying to work with them across the holidays in December and early January. And we had the new CFO come on, and, you know, he kind of said, let's stop beating our heads against the wall with the budgets and worry about the immediate cash problems right now. So we referred them up to the board at that point, but Getting something on the board's agenda is not the same as getting it under consideration at the board. I mean, it's the meetings are shorter than the ones we have here and messier than the ones we have here. So they sat on the agenda for several meetings before the board took them up.
I understand that Sasha and Bill are the next.
Yes, I actually have a couple of questions. So there are three bylaws amendments, and these are going to go out to all of membership to vote on?
To local boards to vote on.
Okay. So it has. But I guess my question about this is, we've been talking about how the bylaws need to be drastically changed. Is this any kind of a review of that level on the PNB level? No. Okay. And then was there any discussion, so they couldn't make payroll on 3/15 and the next payroll was June 1st or something? What do we know about these three units in terms of their making payroll in the future, I guess is my question.
The CFO's distributed best case scenario cash flow estimates. In other words, if the rosy projections the stations are making bear out, what will things look like? And that still shows them not being able to pay all their bills through the summer. I mean, all their bills, including central services, which WPFW at this point is like 6 months behind on that, also not making payroll without assistance, and also having difficulty funding their health care benefits. WBAI is a similar issue. The rosy projections still don't show them being able to pay everything through the summer. A contributing factor with their failure to make payroll was that one of their bank accounts was frozen because they tried to cash a bad check. So they had some money they weren't able to touch that is cleared up now. And the Pacifica Radio Archive, they're facing two problems. One is they budgeted to have a fund drive in April, a network-wide fund drive, like you all are familiar with, that they didn't do. I don't know why. The second is that they budget on the expectation that they'll receive dues from radio stations, and WPFW is like 8 months behind. WBAI is, sorry, I don't have the numbers in front of me, so these are ballparks, a few months behind, and we're a few months behind. At KPFA. So at that sense, they're kind of at the mercy of the stations.
6 minutes to go.
May
Bill.
I just respond to the bylaws question? Can I just respond?
Wait, this is the bylaw.
Yeah.
Yes,
right.
Go ahead,
so,
Janet.
So there are two possible times that bylaws amendments can be considered each year. It's at most two, let's say. So there's a second ballot that could happen. So that's one thing. Another thing is that there are a number of ways to propose bylaws amendments. And one of the ways is six directors sign on. A second is a majority vote of the delegates of each of two radio stations. And then the third has to do with 1% of the members of the whole network. So there are three ways. And so that the one of the issues that comes up is a timeline for the process. But that doesn't stop people from working on their drafts. It's just submitting them.
Bill. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I kind of know the more or less the two radio stations. Is there any, do you know of any discussion with the archives about their doing something to cut their expenses?
Four minutes to the end of the meeting.
There was a mandate issued by the National Board in April, I believe, Janet? It had been recommended some months prior by the National Finance Committee that the archive cut its spending by the equivalent of $40,000 a year. There was just a round of hour reductions and one layoff that went into effect at the archives. which you're probably seeing the evidence of in your inbox.
Okay. Are you finished, Sasa? Okay. Bill.
I wanted to respond or just consider what Jose said a few minutes ago. And it kind of relates to this bigger picture about solving KPFA's problems. I mean, what I heard Jose said is it would be impossible to work through the boards to get the organization restructured. He's saying you have to go to the membership. It's an interesting point, because if you tried to hold a national retreat, we were looking at that, that might cost $100,000. Do you want to spend $100,000 having a national retreat with board members from stations that will not be able to get together, or do you want to spend $100,000 going to the membership? It's an interesting question that needs to be thought through.
So that's part of that little subcommittee.
Yeah.
Okay. Are we done with this section? Okay. The audit, Margie?
I said I'd send out a written.
Okay. Janet?
I move to adjourn.
Oh, I'd like to. We've got 3 minutes. I'd like to just put to bed the old business B point, but there was a motion to adjourn. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
All opposed?
Nay. Nay. Okay. All right. We're adjourned. Thank you, everybody, on the online. Okay. Bye.